Thanks, Kim, so much for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Of course. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Would you please introduce yourself and let our voters know why you're running for city council again?
Sure. Especially post-Helene, some of these things are hitting really hard. My name is Kim Roney. I serve on the Asheville City Council, and I'll be on the ballot for re-election. And among the reasons I'm running is I've seen Ashevillians struggling to make ends meet as the cost of living rises, while unchecked tourism strains our natural resources, burdens our infrastructure, and displaces our most vulnerable neighbors. And it's a matter of priorities. If we make this a great place to live and work, it'll be a great place to visit one day again, too. It's why I'm committed to advancing affordability, public safety, and climate and neighborhood resiliency. Another one of the reasons I'm running is because I'm a music educator. This is my 25th year teaching. So there are new voters in this election that I've worked with since they were in kindergarten. And I want a hopeful future for our generation and for the next generation. And so folks can get more information on the work that I've already done on council, the work I've shared in community, and the core tenets of my campaign at KimRoneyForAsheville.com.
Thank you for that. Kim, affordable housing is unquestionably one of Asheville's biggest issues. What concrete actions will you take to make housing more affordable here in Asheville?
So for me, affordability is not just about affordability of your housing, which we're in a crisis mode before Hurricane Helene and even more so now, but it's also about affordability of your utilities and transportation choices. So what we'll need to continue doing is partnering for deeply affordable housing. And I'm talking about, you know, for folks making less than $15 an hour and our vulnerable populations, our elder populations, disabled neighbors. So it's going to mean land banking. It's going to mean using our city and county-owned land through partnership to make sure that we not only build the housing that we need, but also close to transit corridors so that people don't have to have the expense of owning a car, and close to resources like groceries and childcare, because that's called location affordability. If you don't have to have those expenses of commuting far away, then your gas costs go down and you can spend more time with your family, so your childcare costs go down, for example. Some of the ways that we're working on our affordability housing plan right now will change post-Helene, but it includes things like our housing trust fund so that we can use our dollars and leverage our local tax dollars, and hopefully if the affordable housing bond package passes, then we'll have even more resources to leverage, making sure that when we have private public partnerships, we get the deeply affordable units we need, not the affordable housing that no one can afford.
Improving housing affordability would also make a big impact on homelessness. Other improvement opportunities exist in harm reduction and mental health services. What solutions can you offer to the problems in these areas for homelessness, harm reduction, and mental health?
Okay, so homelessness is going to be a problem that our community needs to continue to tackle together. There is a new continuum of care. So the continuum of care is a group of people that's a board where you have like our hospital and our homeless providers and some of our unhoused neighbors bringing their experience to the table too, with the city and the county and faith communities and community organizations working on our budgets, plans, and policies to reduce homelessness in our community. And we, as members of the public, including myself, and I invite my neighbors to participate too, can be partners in the continuum of care as well. And so the easiest way to find that is to just use your Google or search engine to type Asheville homelessness continuum of care, and then it'll pop up and it'll give you instructions on how you, your neighborhood, your faith community, the place where you work can join as members in helping to advance that work. It's going to mean working together, not just scattering in our different silos of work, but bringing all the resources to the table with the goal of keeping people housed and keeping people from becoming unhoused, as well as getting our neighbors that are unhoused into shelter. And we know that because some of our shelters were also damaged by Hurricane Helene, we're going to have individuals that were already suffering from homelessness and more population that is entering either sheltered or unsheltered homelessness. So I can't stress enough the fact that we need all hands on deck, and that includes the listener today. So once again, join in our continuum of care. Harm reduction efforts, we do have partners that work not just at the Buncombe County Health and Human Services level, but organizations like Steady Collective and WinCap. Those are great places to get plugged in with your resources and your volunteer efforts. But they're at the table with us at the continuum of care, as well as our mental health service providers. But we also are going to have to expand programs like the community paramedicine. That is a budget problem. That is a math problem, but it is also a moral problem. And our budgets are our moral agreements with each other in our community on how we prioritize the services we provide with our tax dollars. And until we start moving money in that direction, we're not going to see a sustainable change. So that's why I've advocated for a program like the HEART program in Durham, which Fayetteville is also bringing on and Raleigh's looking at, would be matching the right person with the right skills and training to crises like overdose, substance use disorder, mental health, behavioral health, and homelessness. Once again, this is a budget choice. So that's why I'm committed to making sure that we prioritize that with real dollars and not just talk.
Mm-hmm. On that topic, do you then support the targeting of houseless people by the Asheville City Police Department, like the homeless camp sweeps that we've seen, or the special operations which targeted arrests of panhandlers that we've seen over the past year?
So this one, I realize when I'm at an intersection and I see one of my, you know, human siblings or neighbors that are in dire situations, standing in a very dangerous situation on the side of our roads, because we know we have, you know, one of the highest bike pedestrian accident ratios in the state. So when our neighbors are standing on the side of the road, it shows me how vulnerable people really are. And I do acknowledge that just fining people or arresting people or targeting those neighbors when they're already in crisis doesn't get them out of harm's way. It makes them more poor. And when that happens, when we're stacking charges against our neighbors, it puts us all in a hole because it puts that individual in more debt and when they already didn't have money. So what I would love for us to do is to truly address the root causes of poverty in the first place. That's going to come through housing, matching the right person with the right tools and training when folks are in crisis, permanently supportive housing so that the housing has services for behavioral health and mental health and substance use disorder, so that we all benefit. And once again, that's why it's so important that our budgets and plans and policies align with our community values.
Thank you for that. Next question is a two-part question. do you support the BID, the Business Improvement District? So why or why not? And what do you want to see when it comes to the next decision of the BID process, which includes the governance structure, the management, and the services that will be delivered?
I continue to be very concerned, and it's why I didn't vote to fund the BID in the first place. The Business Improvement District purports or claims to address issues around public safety. It's $1.2 million a year budget. And what I see between the community engagement and the real deep need for public safety, where we have gaps in our public responses, aren't going to be solved by someone wearing a jersey and with a broom. It's not sitting the right person with the right tools and training. It is going to drain our downtown commercial and residential owners and renters of tax base to do what the BID purports to do, but we're still going to have that public safety gap. We're still going to have cleanliness gaps. I would love to have been able to use those dollars to have a downtown, say, sanitation unit where we paid our sanitation workers living wage, which we don't currently do at our entry-level position. So, no, I don't support the bid. But the bid has been passed. And so at this point, my role as a city council member is to make sure that we have oversight, which means of those public tax dollars, that there's transparency around the process. And it's also to create a culture of welcoming and belonging so that we have the people most impacted by the bid. So like residential renters, commercial renters, small businesses, Black and women owned businesses at the table. And that's only going to happen if we have that authentic culture of belonging where people can sit at the table and help us make the decisions that come next.
Since HCA acquired Mission, the quality of care has suffered to the point that it was or is in danger of losing its contract with Medicare and Medicaid. What, if anything, can the city do about the decline of this institution, which is so critical to the well-being of our community?
So when we see something that's outside of the scope of the city council, in this case, HCA oversight, one of the things that our elected officials can do, and which I've continued to do, like through our non-discrimination ordinance, LGBTQ plus inclusive, that also includes veteran and pregnancy status, is use my position and to advocate for our community with courage, right? I want to tell a good story and a hopeful story, but it's also going to be a true story, at least a part of it that I can tell. And so in the example of HCA, we have stood beside our nurses in their contract negotiations. We have advocated to the North Carolina Attorney General's office, and asked for that kind of accountability. I can also say during the first week after the hurricane, I was able to join our state senator, Julie Mayfield, other council members, and HCA hospital staff in touring our facilities. And I heard really loudly from the staff that in this moment of crisis, HCA did what it always should have and could have been doing, which is support its staff and provide excellent quality care to our community. I can also say I'm really encouraged that the nurses, the Mission Nurses United Union, just won their contract. So through this crisis, through this storm, there are silver linings. And so we are starting to see what it looks like when our hospital does truly care for our community and support our nurses. Those are the kinds of steps that public pressure can win for our community.
Great. Thank you. Preliminary data indicates that so far the Merriman Avenue road diet, or conversion of the major sector of this key thoroughfare from 4 lanes to 3 lanes, allowed for enhanced bicycle and pedestrian access. It reduced crashes and increased bicycle traffic. Impact on pedestrians still a little unclear. All of this with an average increased travel time of no more than 14 seconds. How does this information inform your view of the upcoming major Patton Avenue reconfiguration in response to the I-26 connector?
Ooh, let's talk about road safety. I am always going to be about making our roads safer for everyone who uses them, right? So I get that folks are like, 14-second average, my commute time took longer than that. It increased more than that. But it, for me, if the road is safer, including for drivers of cars, I'm going to always advocate for that. And so when I see that crash data is reduced for everyone, including the drivers of cars on Merriman Avenue, by nearly 30%, I have to be about that. I have to be about getting people home safe. So that's one of the reasons why I'm always going to advocate for data-informed infrastructure for complete streets that are designed for safety, not only relying on enforcement, so that folks get where they're going safely. And as a byproduct, we also saw Merriman Avenue be safer for people who walk and bike and use the bus. So this is Merriman Avenue for me is a great example of we made it safer for cars and it benefited everybody. And I know that it's not widely popular, and I know that change will take time, but I'm really encouraged by not only the data that we see and the data that we're using from other cities, and we're following our complete streets policy because it's a matter of public safety. But I'm also reminded of Miriam Kaba, who writes that because everything has to change, it can seem so daunting. The good news is there's lots of places to start.
Sidewalks and improved bus services are things that residents have been calling for years. How do you push those efforts forward?
So I serve on our Metropolitan Planning Organization, the MPO. And our MPO is all the state-maintained roads. So one of the ways that I advocate is building a public awareness of what's possible so that our community will know how to advocate when it comes to those budgets, plans, and policies. And at the MPO, I am regularly advocating for safety outcomes, not just measuring how unsafe our roads are after the accidents happen, but weaving in equity and safety in every decision. And it's meant that sometimes I'm alone or one of two or three no votes in a very large table. But when we see things like what happened post-Helene with like Swannanoa River being River Road, being the road in the river, we always knew that those roads were going to need more resilient infrastructure for the long haul. And that's why my commitment is making sure that when we build our roads back, we build them so that they're safer and more resilient against the kinds of climate change outcomes that we see, like the storm.
The legality or illegality of drugs certainly is not in City Council's purview. But if you're elected, would you consider working to put the enforcement of marijuana prohibition at the lowest priority for the Asheville Police Force and allocate significant money to social services for other efforts such as employment subsidies and training to reintegrate drug war victims?
I love this question because I've been talking with state, local, and national offices about what North Carolinians need. It's not in the purview of City Council, but when I see our neighbors in the Eastern Band of Cherokee moving to decriminalize marijuana, I see the reasons behind it. They've made the argument that this is good paying jobs. It's agriculture industry, so it's diversifying the economy. It's about public safety. It's about health and well-being. And it's about infrastructure. So I want those good paying jobs. I want to diversify our economy so we're not so heavily reliant on tourism. I want to fix our roads and bridges, and I want to pay our teachers. And I really can't bear for North Carolina to be last when we already have the right and ready tool to handle this, and it's our ABC board. I'm the council liaison to the ABC board. So when I see how North Carolina was able to move from the prohibition of alcohol to a regulated system for it, I see that we already have the path for that. And so this is going to take like a statewide coalition, but I'm hoping that what we see in North Carolina, and especially with the destruction post-Helene in Western North Carolina, that we can once again make that appeal back to the state. That this, we have a moral obligation. We have equity concerns about who's being targeted the most for criminalization, but also we need the revenue to make sure that Western North Carolina and ultimately the whole state are more resilient against storms like this. So count me in on whether it's advocating at the state level or whatever we can do at the policy level. But ultimately, I want to see North Carolina move into the current, really, right? Because our neighbors in West in Virginia and other states are already making these steps, and we're going to need the resources, and we can't just go back to property taxes and keep draining our residents when we have other options.
Nice, thank you. What are your thoughts on short-term rental restrictions and the flagrant violations of the current regulations? Do you believe the city should act to make Airbnb accountable with regards to its refusal to provide key data that would help us facilitate the enforcement of our own regulations?
Yes, absolutely. Which is why in 2021, I worked with another council member to make it possible to have the city portal for Airbnb, VRBO, and Expedia. We worked with the city legal department, the major short-term rental listings, and homestay owners to say, okay, if you have a legal homestay permit, then there's a path forward. But if you have an illegal listing, whole home, short-term rental, it would have kicked everyone else that was illegal off of the listing sites automatically at the platform level, which would have saved taxpayers a lot of money because we wouldn't have ended up paying for all this enforcement that doesn't work, right? But it still would have allowed people who are, say, renting a room in their home as their small business, as the way that they use their home, still had a path forward to implement that. Unfortunately, back in 2021, we didn't have enough council support to put that in place. And so it's widely understood that that window of missed opportunity may have closed. If we can reopen that window, I think we should. I'm also imagining that post a lien, we're going to actually need to work with our community to find a path forward to those previous short-term rentals that don't have the tourism economy right now, to provide a way for them to become long-term rentals as we've always needed them to be. And I think that's where we can partner with organizations like Thrive Asheville, who are helping landlords come on board and have liaisons and support for our renters and our landlords together.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Kim, is there anything else that you'd like to let voters know that maybe we didn't discuss before we let you go?
Yeah, I want to just share that I'm in this with you. It took me 8 days to find all my piano students, and thankfully everyone's safe and sound, and I'm so grateful. But we've been faced with the loss of wreckage and trauma. And I've seen our community really show up with the courage and compassion I knew we were capable of in taking better care of our neighbors and our mountain home. And I'm hopeful of our future together. I know the people of Appalachia are feisty and caring and resilient and capable. So while we are grieving, I'm looking forward to transforming that grief into action. And just a reminder that early voting starts October 17th and it goes until November 2nd. You can get more information on the resources that are being shared in Western North Carolina, as well as regular updates by going to my website at kimroneyforasheville.com. I'm endorsed by the Asheville Firefighters, the Sierra Club, Equality NC, Asheville DSA, Reverend Amy Cantrell, Drew Reisinger, Coach Connor Jardaleza, Gordon Smith, Levy Montgomery, and lots of friends and neighbors like yourself.
Thank you, Kim. Appreciate it.